to The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And now your host, Armand DeMille.
And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Thank you, Elizabeth. We are continuing our discussion about anxiety, excitement, and fear. And yesterday, if you've listened to the program, or you could always get it on our website, we did a program about anxiety and fear, and we were talking about phobias. I introduced you to phobias and the idea of phobias. Phobias are one of the things that we therapists have to deal with a great deal. Mostly people find that they have to be medicated to get over them, and we find there are different ways of treating it. So one of the things that we want you to understand is that there are some angles about phobias that once you learn about them, you get a better handle on them. Before we go further with phobias, I want to give you one interesting consideration. That's the one I mentioned a little earlier. Phobias have a secondary gain. A secondary gain is that there's a hidden benefit to having the phobia. Like if you're afraid to go out, secondary gain is everybody comes to you. You know, if you have some of these mothers who never get visited, if they don't go out and if they're saying that they can't go out, people will come and visit them. So there's a secondary gain to having the phobia. A secondary gain to almost all phobias is that you can somehow unconsciously avoid all of the responsibilities of adulthood. But that doesn't make you wrong for having the phobia. The phobia is an illness. The secondary gain is unconscious. Of course, if you have a phobia, there's no awareness of the secondary gain. So it's not a conscious manipulation, although people accuse the people who have these phobias of conscious manipulation. Because phobias are a trick of the mind, a compulsive distraction that prevents you from living. Now, there's an interesting fact. You cannot feel the phobia if you're not in a state of heightened excitement. Now, just listen to this as an interesting idea. You must be nervous to feel a phobia. I knew a woman once who had a phobia about taking a shower. And when she would take the shower, she would visualize terrible things happening, falling on her from the shower head. Okay? When she would visualize this, she couldn't stand it. We eventually did some work on it. We taught her a deep relaxation right before going into the shower. She began to relax. We reduced all anxiety in her system. She got into the shower and she realized that as soon as she went into the shower, before she turned on the water, she was not nervous. So we had assumed, and she had assumed it was what was coming out of the showerhead. The truth was, when the water hit her skin, it stimulated. She had very, very thin skin. It stimulated her nervous system. And then, when stimulating her nervous system through the tingling sensation on her skin, she began to feel her anxiety. Then that turned into a phobia, because as soon as she felt the anxiety, the body said, where's the danger? And what was she looking at? A showerhead. So the danger became the showerhead, and a phobia started. So all we had to do was find out a way to get her out of showers and into baths, and the phobias disappeared. It was no longer a phobia. So it's a little tricky. Another interesting aspect, drugs successfully eliminate phobias. If you give a person enough psychotropic drugs, you can get rid of a phobia, especially drugs that make you relax. Strong drugs. The stronger the drug, the more you relax, like morphine, heroin, soporifics, you know, the old Quaaludes. Strong tranquilizers will take the phobia away. They leave you functionless, but they take the phobia away. Now, I claim that there's further evidence about the secondary gain of phobias. I claim that the reason people have phobias are twofold. One is an anxiety overreaction, and the other is the secondary gain. They have a nervous and anxiety-related condition, which means they have a nervous system that tends to go into hyperdrive. And they have a secondary avoidance gain, which in effect, I believe, removes them from functioning normally in the world. So if you take drugs for phobias, enough drugs, you make yourself functionless anyway. And you've satisfied two giant needs at once. You've calmed down your nervous system, and you've removed yourself from the world. Therefore, the phobia doesn't have to be there. You get what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, to me, it's such an exciting thought.
If you're alone, then there's no fight or flight.
And if you're drugged out and you know, you're so drugged out that you can't function, that takes care of the secondary gain. Well, if the original reason for having the phobia was the unconscious secondary gain of extricating yourself from normal life, then the stupor of drugs does exactly that. And you don't need the phobia any longer, but this may not be the way to go. You know, constantly taking morphine and drugs and trying to lay around in a stupor may not be the way you want to go. This is just for your consideration. Let's get back to some definitions.
Okay, another common phobia is agoraphobia, and most of us have heard about this. It's the fear of being in a public place that has no escape hatch, such as a public bus or a crowded store, or just an open area in general. It's the fear of crowds or markets, which is where agora means market in Greek. And it is one of the most disabling phobias because victims can become housebound. They don't leave the house. They're afraid of being outside.
There's an interesting thing in this world that's gone on over the last 10 to 15 years. There are more and more agoraphobics. The rate is growing alarmingly fast. And it's kind of crippling because kind of people move out of society. They're just gone and you don't even know they're gone. But they have three weapons. They have a telephone, so they could talk on the phone. They have a TV. The TV gives them some sense of contact so they can order all kinds of things. But the internet is also feeding a lot of these people who are doing nothing but being on the internet. I know, for example, I used to play tournament chess. One of the things I like to do on the internet is occasionally pull up a chess game. Well, I go into this chess thing where there are the same people all the time playing chess. It's the same names. They never leave. I'll speak to them. I'll play and I'll talk to them, but it'll be once a day, once for every 2 days. But they're always there. You can always find them no matter what time of day. It's become their life. They have a social interaction, but they never really engage people. So agoraphobia is growing. It's growing. And agoraphobics often mask their fear from their mates by looking chronically ill with imagined and self-perpetuating disorders such as chronic fatigue syndrome, because it's hard to tell whether a person really has chronic fatigue syndrome or not. So they could look it, they could get all the evidence on it, they could buy tapes, they could say, look, this is what I have, they could take their herbs, their spices, and they could just stay sick at home with this self-perpetuating disorder. Because there's somebody stays home and allows them to stay home, and then their mates say, okay, I understand. There's another syndrome called reflex sympathetic dystonia, which I know is hard for people to find, but it's one that people are enjoying a lot nowadays or getting the most out of it by any of these vague, non-defined illnesses that somebody defines somewhere, people are saying they have, and they're laying around sick. Now, if it's seen as sick, they're allowed to stay at home. But it could be a growing agoraphobia. And agoraphobia is an illness that grows with every avoidance. And if the mate believes the illness story, they, in effect, feed the agoraphobia. And then years later, they find out, oh, no wonder they didn't go out. They were becoming agoraphobic. So that's the story on agoraphobia, arachnobutrophobia. Well, very soon. First is another of the phobic disorders.
Okay. Simple phobia is the fear of specific objects or situations that cause terror. The condition can begin at any age, and actually this particular category covers all of what people think of as phobias. The fear of snake, the fear of cats, the fear of flying, the fear of enclosed spaces, the fear of hanging by your toes from a tall building.
Now, as we read you this list of simple phobias, remember they sound bizarre and silly, but there are many people out there who live with a sense of terror about these things. So get this. A phobia is a fear of something that strikes a feeling of terror or panic. Usually there's a specific trigger, an incident in childhood, where the person would have lost approval or love that is associated with that specific object, like with agoraphobia,
which has to do with the fear of crossing the street. That's A-G-Y-R-O-phobia, fear of crossing the street. You can just picture a child being told not to cross the street alone. Then imagine that this child learns that they can cross the street alone and nothing happens to them. Then comes the essential conflict. If I can cross the street alone, but my mother tells me I shouldn't because it's too dangerous, then I must either believe that my mother is wrong, right, and therefore I lose her in some way, I invalidate her, or I have to believe she's right. Now, a child who's totally dependent on their mothers may decide mom is right. I cannot cross the street. It's too dangerous. And that could be the beginning of agoraphobia.
So in order for the child not to lose his mother, he strikes a terror in himself when he thinks about crossing the street. And the terror gets associated with the thought, and he has formed a phobia.
And then there's a secondary gain. Because anybody who is that dependent on their parents, anybody who's that dependent on their parents, will grow up a dependent personality later. And therefore, their inability to cross the street means that they've always got to have somebody around, and they're helpless. And so they attract people who want to take care of people. Mm-hmm. So you have the secondary gain of having this illness, the fear of crossing the street, and you get the secondary gain of always having someone to help you. And it's a tertiary gain is you remained a child, which a lot of people try to protect.
Right. And in a situation like that, for example, you could also have an interaction with the parent. When they say, don't cross the street, it's said with such an exaggerated fear that the child is also trying to please the parent by being dependent and never crossing the street, even when it's reasonable for them to begin crossing the street.
Well, we're going to give you now the list of some of the phobias and their names. Let you hear some of them, just so that you should know most phobias start with the letter A. Nobody knows why, but there's a lot with P's and M's. But let's talk about some of the A phobias. Here we go. Here come a couple for you. I bet you want to know what arachibutyrophobia is. Arachibutyrophobia, it's about time I told you, is the fear, the phobic fear, the panic reaction that people have when they think of peanut butter sticking to the roof of their mouth. Now, that may make you break up and think that's as funny as you can imagine, but these people imagine peanut butter sticking to the roof of their mouth and they have a panic response. And there's a lot of people who feel that way. They're afraid to think of it. People listening now who hear me say peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth are feeling very nervous. There's a group of them out there.
As a matter of fact, there's an ad currently on TV of someone who gets caught taking a bite of a peanut butter sandwich, and a television show calls up and he has to answer a question to win $1 million or whatever. And he knows the answer, but he can't get it out.
And that would trigger a phobic response in the people watching that ad.
Right.
Because there's a suffocation fear that comes with it. Let me just let you hear a few. Did you ever have the fear of itching or of insects that cause itching? That's called acarophobia, A-C-A-R-O phobia. How about the fear of darkness? Are you one of those people who can't sleep and have a panicky response of suddenly thrown in a dark room? What's that called, Bill?
Acluophobia,
A-C-H-L-U-O-P-H-O-B-I-A. How about acousticophobia? Can you imagine what that is out there? Acousticophobia, it's exactly what you think. It's the fear of noise.
And acrophobia, A-C-R-O, which is the fear of heights.
And aerophobia, A-E-R-O, aerophobia, is a fear of drafts.
And agoraphobia, as we talked
that.
About that.
Agoraphobia, the fear of crossing the street.
And alchemophobia, the fear of needles.
Or pointed objects. That's a lot more common than people could imagine. There's a group of people, if they see a needle or a pointed object, they have a panic response. That's called eichmophobia, I think.
Eichmo, you're right.
Eichmo. There's algophobia. A lot of people have this, which is the fear of pain. I was talking to a man recently who was talking about people and some people's aversion to any form of pain. They're so aversive to the slightest amount of pain that they become completely crippled if something hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they're avoiding pain completely. Pain is a natural part of life. Things hurt because things in your body eventually break and you bump into things.
Right.
But there are people who have a phobic response.
To say nothing of the difficulty in going to the dentist or the doctor.
Especially.
Even when you should, yeah.
Especially so, therefore, the dentists and the doctors offer a painless life. The doctors offer you drugs to make sure you feel no pain.
Mm-hmm.
Which could kill you in a dozen other ways. And the dentists offer you enough medication in your mouth so you feel no pain, which is never true anyway.
I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired. My mind is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, no, no. I'm so tired. I don't know what to do. I'm so tired. My mind is set on you. I wonder, should I call you? But I know what you would do. You'd say, putting you under is no joke. It's doing me harm. You know I can't sleep.
We are here through the good graces of the master transmitter in the sky, whoever that is, and the Empire State Building from whom we rent this transmitter. And I cannot let time pass by without letting you know the dire necessity that we have to keep WBAI on the air. So we found out, as we've mentioned before, 1,500 new people. Never before have been in touch with WBAI. Get in touch with the Positive Mind every week through one resource or another. They tune in to hear a piece or to go to the website. That's a lot of people in this world. If you figure 1,500 a week times 52 weeks, we're talking a lot of people. And these are people who are touched not only by the Positive Mind, but by WBAI and the amazing spirit and freedom of WBAI. In order to keep this going, we need you to go to your phones and dial 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. It's a call center. You have to go to the call center and say WBAI Transmitter Fund. The Transmitter Fund is about us trying to save the transmitter, which is where we are. We have to pay off a bill to the Empire State Building. We are behind 6 months in rent. We've made up some of it thanks to your help. We've got another bunch to make up, and then we have got to make some promise about the future with them. But the transmitter comes first, and for that I need your help. You could go to the website, www.givetowbai.org. That's www.givetowbai.org. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Each week, we bring you wonderful ideas, ways of living, and along with that, through WBAI, you hear what's really happening in the world, and you hear the likes of some of the heroes, I believe, of the airwaves that we have. We have some wonderful people on the station. They're going to be silenced if we can't catch up with what we're doing, and with your help, we will be catching up what we're doing. 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Julian Joiello, my cousin and engineer, is here with me. We are working to try to provide to you the kind of programming that's of value to you. And we're listening to a man today talk about his experience and knowledge about creativity, which is something to give to you. So be creative in your thinking about this. And I know taxes are coming up and, you know, but what you might consider if you have any money coming back from your taxes, you might consider tithing. Tithing is an interesting concept. It's a practically religious concept where you take 10% of your income and you promise it somewhere. Do you do that? Well, I do. I find myself giving very generously to everything around me, and I find it comes back to me in one form or another. 516-620-3602. Give to WBAI.org. Give to, that's the number two, WBAI.org. If you would, please, we need you to go 516-620-3602. We'll get back to our interview in just a moment. 516-620-3602. 620-3602. Show an act of faith. You know, if each one of you, even though you've given before, but if each one of you listening go to the phone and just donate $10 right now, $10, it would be a show of force in the, it would work into thousands. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. www.givetowbai.org. And to all of you whom I've spoken to, who have been wonderful, who we've called already to give appointments, making for the consultations, it's been wonderful speaking with you. I've had such a beautiful experience. I look forward to meeting those of you. But this, in this case, we're not offering a premium. We're just simply saying we need a straight additional donation, and we're going to keep doing it, keep doing it, keep pushing at it all month until we can get this bill paid off and we have, and we can head ourselves towards our future. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Go to your phones right now, my friends, if you would, or just dial up give2wbai.org, mention the transmitter fund, and make a difference.
We're talking about the different forms of anxiety. We were talking about phobias, and you should only know there are about 500 listed phobias. But here are some more that I think may be of interest to you, because these are actual phobias. Now, you have to think of the fact that people have panic responses when they consider this, like anuptaphobia. Anupta, think of the Nupta in there, N-U-P-T-A. It's the fear of staying single. You know, the fear of staying single, the fear of, and there's, every time you think about it, you have this panic response. Apiphobia, A-B-I, not happy, but happy, is a fear of bees. Here's one that affects a lot of people, especially people who are concerned about cleanliness and health, automisophobia. Automisophobia is the fear of being dirty. Now, later we're going to talk about obsessions and compulsions, and you're going to hear about compulsive hand washing that goes along with automisophobia. And then there's autophobia. Autophobia, perhaps, is one of the most crippling things that people have, and they don't even know they don't have it. They have it because they have such a fear of being alone. That's what it's called, autophobia. It's not the fear of cars. Autophobia is the fear of being alone. Most people who have autophobia never face it because they're always keeping themselves busy with people or TV. TV allows you not to be alone, so in some way you're so busy you're never with yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then there's aetychophobia, which is the fear of failure, which I think is probably potentially one of the most crippling phobias.
It is, because, you know, again, one of the things that people do is they develop this avoidance mechanism. They have the fear of failure, and therefore what they do, it's not just a regular fear of failure, not like a little worry about it. They have panic when they think of the fact that they may fail. So what they do is they live a real mediocre or substandard life to avoid ever having to face the fear. Like in bromidrophobia, I think it was the name, bromidrosophobia, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. That's the fear of body smells. The fear of the smell, a panic response when you smell somebody's body and you smell some of the odors on somebody's body. So what those people do is they stay alone, so they never have to face that, because there's something about that that induces a panic.
And then there's bacillophobia, which is one we hear a lot about, kind of the Howard Hughes disease, the fear of microbes and germs.
This is a list of phobias. Just to let you know, there's about 500 in general that are have been things that people, they've just gone through it and they feel a panic. That's phobia. And it's much more serious than any of you imagine. Since we're doing serious at the moment, let me break serious a moment and let me talk to you about the psychiatric voicemail. I was asked to repeat the psychiatric voicemail that we had. This is your psychiatric voicemail. Imagine if you called a place. Here's how you use the psychiatric voicemail. And imagine if you dialed my number and my voice said, or somebody's voice said, "Hi there, if you're an obsessive compulsive, please press 1 repeatedly. If you're a codependent, please ask someone to press 1 for you. If you have multiple personalities, please press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid delusional, we know who you are and what you want. Just stay on the line so we can trace the call. If you're a schizophrenic, please listen carefully and a little voice will tell you which number to press. And if you're a manic depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer. Let's get back to our programming. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to move from phobias to talk about another form of anxiety disorder, which is obsessive-compulsive disorders, also called OCD. Bill?
Right. Obsessive-compulsive disorders afflict about 2.4 million Americans. And the victims of this particular disorder attempt to cope with their anxiety, because anxiety is one of the major symptoms of it, by associating it with obsessions, which is defined as repeated, unwanted, intrusive thoughts, thoughts that you can't control. Or, secondly, by compulsive behaviors, which is defined as a ritualistic behavior that seems to help the person keep some semblance of control. An obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, is characterized by repeated, intrusive, and unwanted thoughts, obsessions, that cause anxiety. So an obsession is a thought process that you can't get out of your mind, and it makes you more anxious whenever you think about it. Obsessions are sometimes accompanied by compulsions, which are behaviors, which are ritualized and repeated and seem to relieve the anxiety and contain it. Common obsessions include the fear of germs, the fear of dirt, the fear of contamination.
This is a real popular problem. This is a real popular problem among people who are nutrition conscious, as I mentioned a little earlier, because they're becoming terrified about every water, germ, or potential bacteria.
So what starts off as a good idea about how to live a better life and a healthier life and a longer life becomes filled with paranoid obsessive concerns.
You can really see this disorder at health expos, where people are sitting in the audience wearing gloves all the time. They're afraid to touch anything. So the fear of dirt, and they go to the health expos, and they're looking for more things to feed their fears. It's sad because it's such a beautiful opportunity, and there's so much beauty going on. There's so much tension and worry that the body breaks down under the strain. So here you are, well-intended, looking to make your life better, and you're getting so worried about what's going on there that you start to break down. Add to this that germ-phobic, obsessive people can't touch dogs and cats because they're afraid of getting some kind of dirt, and they're reluctant to play in the dirt with children. So now you worry all the time, and you can't do even the simplest things to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, like petting animals or touching and hugging people, playing with children. And I guess, you know, you'd also have to imagine what kind of a sexual life a germ-phobic person would have. You'd have to have, besides wearing gloves, maybe even a condom on your tongue just to kiss somebody. And you'd have to wear gloves when holding hands. I mean, people who suffer from obsessive disorders do not automatically have compulsive behaviors, however. But most people who go through compulsive ritualistic behaviors also suffer from obsessions.
And in fact, Bill, most people with obsessions are also phobic about something or other. The key problem in obsessive compulsive disorder is the inability to feel certain about things, no matter how hard a person tries or how many times they may repeat actions to make sure. They think about something over and over again, or they do something over and over again. People with compulsions go through senseless, repeated, and ritualistic behaviors that are supposed to prevent or produce a future event.
Right. To repeat, okay. People with compulsions go through senseless, repeated, and ritualistic behaviors that are supposed to prevent or produce a future event. In other words, they're defending themselves against something that they don't want to have happen in the future by washing their hands. Or I remember when we were kids, we used to, on the way to school, say, avoid all the cracks in the sidewalk and repeat to ourselves, step in a crack, break your mother's back. And it was a kid's game at the time, but it's interesting because it's almost identical to an obsessive compulsive disorder.
Like you have to open and close your wallet 15 times before you go out. So the people, you know, they're about to go out and they take out their wallets and they open it and they close it and they open it and they close it and they open it and they close it and they do it 15 times, specifically 15 times before they feel safe. The anticipated fear is that you'll actually lose your wallet, but the ritual is that you must actually open and close the wallet 15 times before the anxiety goes away, which is very difficult if you're a triskaidekaphobic, right? Because triskaidekaphobia is the fear of the number 13, so when you get to 12, what do you do? Well, you can't have a counting phobia to number 15 if you're going to have triskaidekaphobia.
Right. Well, you can do the same thing that the elevator in this building does, I believe. It has 12 and 12A.
And most buildings, right. Just make sure that they... Maybe that's why triskaidekaphobia is there, right? Everybody's avoiding it. Examples of... And you know where the triskaidekaphobia comes from, don't you? You've heard it. I mean, number 13 is supposed to be unlucky. Imagine driving that into the brain of a child. Imagine the child taking that and validating something that a parent said rather than expose, you know, the fact that there is no truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, unlucky 13 gets driven into their brain, so they develop a fear of it. Now, think about what we present on Friday the 13th. You know, we always present horror movies on the programs. People grew up with that. Little wonder they develop a fear of the number 13, all driven into the unconscious. All creating terror in children.
Okay, so examples of some of the compulsive rituals can include, for example, cleaning, which tends to affect women more often than men. And if the victim comes in contact with any dirt, they may spend hours washing and cleaning, even to the point that their hands bleed.
Often people with this disorder will suffer from a complementary obsession, such as worries over infection. I was at a lake a couple of years ago at Omega Institute up in Rhinebeck, where I was doing a workshop. Those of you who don't know about Omega Institute, it's a wonderful place where they have a number of nice workshops over the summer, decent folks, good folks to hang out with, very good food. Stefan Reckhoffen is running the place. It's a great little place, not expensive. I was doing a workshop there for about a week up at Omega, and there... They teach nutrition and yoga, meditation, all these other things. Well, there I am at Omega, and I decided one of my times off to take a swim in their beautiful lake. And I see a whole group of people sitting up on the shore, sweating up a storm. It was mid-August and 95 degrees. The water was great, fresh, cool, a little muddy the way lakes are. And I recognized a few people and invited them to come in the water, you know, because they were sitting up there on the shore sweating, looking down at the lake. You know what they said? They refused to go to the lake because they said there are too many germs in there. Too many germs? Of course there are germs. That's what a lake is. It's an ecosystem of germs. What do? Bathe in Poland Spring bottled water? Do you refuse the shade of trees because there are germs in the bark of the tree? What made germs evil? Since when and how did germs get a bad rap? We need germs. That's how the planet runs. That's one of the things about the animal rights movement that disturbs me also. We want to save animals, but only the cute ones, like dolphins and seals. Why isn't there a snake or a rat protection movement, you know? Because they're not cute. You got to only save the cute animals. Well, let's get back to the subject. We're talking about obsessions and compulsions, and we're presenting some of the more common compulsions. Remember, obsessions are repeated thoughts that seem to engender anxiety as you think about them. Compulsions are ritualistic, repeated behaviors that seem to relieve anxiety as you do them. That's why obsessions and compulsions go together so often. You create the anxiety through your thought process of the obsession, and then you get rid of it by expending the energy through a compulsive physical behavior, like some behavior, right? There's an interesting aspect of control here, which may be the secondary gain of obsessive compulsive disorder. Because by a ritualistic behavior, you're proving to yourself that you have control over something when an obsessive thought makes you feel like you're out of control.
Right. So among the common compulsions are repeating a behavior, such as repeatedly saying a loved one's name several times whenever that person comes up in a conversation.
The more common than that is checking, this thing called checking, which tends to affect men more than women. For example, people check and recheck that doors are locked or electric switches, gas ovens, and water taps are turned off, and they got to check it, and then they leave the house, then they come back and they check it. I know, you ever know what that's like? You know, did I turn off the stove? Well, if it happens to you every time, and you go back three or four times and you check another thing, did I close the back window? Okay, I finally closed everything. You leave, you get down your elevator, and you say, did I close my front door? I went in there so many times that I closed the front door. And you keep checking over and over again. That's a compulsion. It means you're filled with an anxiety that you can't get rid of, so you go into a ritualistic behavior of going back and forth. You think it's realistic. You think you're trying to avoid some kind of a feared event, but it's really the expending of energy that's important here to kind of reduce the anxiety that you're feeling inside.
Well, someone that I work with who would retrace the route that he had taken in his car just to make sure he hadn't hit a pedestrian or caused an accident without knowing it.
Well, there's a lot to do with that, you know, and a lot to do with fears of violence and hurting people that comes up with obsessions and compulsions. We'll get to that a little later. Obsessive-compulsive disorders often begin during the teens or early adulthood, just as the social phobic reactions do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's around teens or early adulthood. It says it's a coping mechanism, a strategy used around that time, around the time of sexual maturity, which seem to go along with, seems to always be some sexual kind of confusion that goes along with people who are phobic, which allows them to a secondary gain of avoiding sex completely because they're in some way crippled, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you see this combination as you examine it. Generally, they're chronic and cause moderate to severe disability in the victims, the compulsive behaviors. And before we go further, let me remind you what we're doing here today. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you this information, which is very valuable, of course. However, you can't have it transmitted down. You cannot, you know. 516-620-3602. This is Armand DeMille. You could go to www.give2wbai.org. And you can make a donation of any kind, $5, $10, $15, whatever it is you give, $1,000 if you could spare it. Because this transmitter, which we are in the hole for, we're paying off part of it, the Empire State Building says, hey, we got other people who want that spot. They'll pay us more. You're in breach of contract. You owe us 6 months' rent. We would like you to leave. Now, this is not because the Empire State Building is a bad building. I have no idea if it's a good or a bad building. What I do know is it's a business building. And they said, we're kind of fed up with carrying you guys who don't pay your rent, and we have other people who want the antenna. The antenna, this incredible thing that we have, which is going to be archaic. I mean, they're not even going to exist in the future. You know, you could be buying old antennas for your house just as is something to have around, because they're not going to exist very long. But for as long as they are there, it's very important because it sends out 90 miles in every direction. And you could get, just imagine where that is, from the top of the Empire State Building. And if you've got a really strong receiver, you could get it from even beyond that. And then through it, somehow, because we broadcast through that antenna, we are also able to broadcast online, and we stream to you. We have just gotten the information that 1,500 new people. 1,500, right, Julian? What's the number? Hold on a second.
We've got 1,500 every week. Unique.
Unique what?
Unique visitors coming in and streaming The Positive Mind from the website.
From the website. 1,500 unique visitors every week. Now, these could be aliens, you know, because as many people thought, these could be these people who are landing on the planet slowly.
That does explain that large number.
That does explain 1,500 aliens.
I mean, yeah.
It's a large number, though, right? It surprised you when you heard it.
It was. It's nice to hear that it's unique. You know, these are new people every week. These aren't just recurring. These are people that are tuning in starting that week and adding to the numbers, so it's pretty cool.
And they go in through the website of The Positive Mind because they're told by somebody else, but then they go into WBAI, and here it is. All you folks, you uniquees out there, you unikins,
No, I didn't mean that. You, but the unique ones. Would you please, 516-620-3602, you like what you're hearing on WBAI? Have you given, have you made a donation to the station? It is a public station. We are listener-supported only, not by anyone else. And the great stuff you hear here and the great stuff you hear at other times on this station all comes to you for free. But it's an education. It's your university. 516-620-3602 or go to www.givetowbai.org. Am I saying it to you, these lessons that we're sliding you in between? 516-620-3602. Make your calls right now, my friends. And we're going back to what we were doing. Thank you. 516-620-3602. Hey, just a reminder, my friends, while we're doing all of this, 516-620-3602, we are asking you to make a donation for the transmitter fund. When you call, do mention the word transmitter for WBAI. Emergency Transmitter Fund. This is what this is for. It's to save the antenna at the WBAI, at the Empire State Building, paying off the dues that we have. 516-620-3602. Hurricane Sandy did wash away a lot of our finances, what we had. We just got bagged. But we're staying with you and we're staying on the air. 516-620-3602. Please go to your phones. Make another donation. You like today's program. You like what you're getting out of it. You're only getting half a program because I'm spending half the time asking you for help. But if you like what you're hearing, please go to your phones right now. 516-620-3602. Show your support. By the end of March, we will be finished with this, hopefully, or we'll be finished with the station, which we don't want. There are too many people pitching in. There are the beautiful people of WBAI. I have seen folks who are producers stepping up during this time, doing things. Mimi Rosenberg is pulling together some wonderful, wonderful music events. Bertol has been unendingly working himself off, and just a many number of people, Kathy Davis, and some of our finest people. 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. If you've had any trouble filling any of getting any response from us at the DeMel Center as a result of a recent offering we made, call us back. You call us at the DeMel Center. If you have any trouble getting through to WBAI.org, if you can't get to 516, call us at 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. You got a problem with anything that we've offered, we will get it to you. If we haven't gotten you the appointment, if you haven't heard back from us, please call us because we honor everything. The station, I can't account for everybody at the station, but with certain problems, if you have them with us and anything that we've done or offered, we will certainly be there for you. 212-757-4488. That's to clarify anything with us. In the meanwhile, the dial-in number to make the donation for the transmitter fund, get ready, you must have heard it all year, 516, all winter, 516-620-3602 or www.givetowbai.org. And here we go. We've got another one for you. We're just in the middle of this. We're going right back to it. 516-620-3602. Our purpose today is to encourage people to donate to help us with this transmitter fund. It's a must. We've got two major issues that we have to deal with at WBAI, both debts that are threatening to put us out of business. We are clearing them up with your help. 516-620-3602. You can do it through the website, www.givetowbai.org. That's givetowbai.org. If you like what you're hearing, if you like the positive mind, if you like WBAI, www.givetowbai.org. Telephone number 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM.
We've been talking about disorders, and we've been talking about a lot of the different anxiety disorders. Right now, we want to address one of the others, which I think is very serious, probably one of the most or crippling of the disorders called post-traumatic stress disorder. Bill, can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay. The post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, is caused by someone experiencing a severely distressing or traumatic event that causes them to become so preoccupied with the experience that they are unable to lead a normal life. It can intrude into their dreams. It can intrude into their waking life. This is often associated with war veterans. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of films and books about that. But post-traumatic stress disorder can occur in anyone who is the survivor of a severe physical or mental trauma. People who have witnessed a mid-air collision, for example, who have survived a life-threatening crime, may develop this illness. The severity of the disorder increases if the trauma was not an anticipated possibility. In other words, if it came out of nowhere. For that reason, not all war veterans develop, obviously, post-traumatic stress disorder despite prolonged and brutal experiences in combat. And this is probably because soldiers expect a certain amount of violence in their daily life. I mean, it fits the situation. It's war. But rape victims, however, have no way to anticipate that it's going to happen to them. They're not suspecting about this attack on their life.
And perhaps what we see more now, and what's finally come out because it's been acceptable for people to report rape, you're seeing this unexpected shock, a kind of what they call a cognitive dissonance, which has made women who are rape victims, and some men who are rape victims, kind of left in a state of suspended animation because everything they believed about life was suddenly destroyed. So sometimes it can even be a post-traumatic response to something like having your purse stolen, which is not that serious. I mean, it's not that serious if you look at it, but the violation puts a shock in the system. A lot of other people who suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder were people in Israel during the people in America who had family in Israel during the recent war, because there was such televised event. The event was televised, and they were seeing the bombs falling in Israel, and they felt a kind of terror that they never got over. So it doesn't actually have to happen to you. But the serious ones we see are the war victims and the rape victims. I think one other area that has not been qualified as post-traumatic stress disorder but should is childhood sexual abuse.
Yes, I agree. With the people that I've worked with who have suffered from sex abuse in childhood, actually I do. Diagnose them as post-traumatic stress disorder, because there's hardly a more stressful experience in life than having your innocence and sense of safety violated by people that you trust.
People who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder re-experience the event that traumatized them through. Through different things.
Right. Nightmares, night terrors, or flashbacks to the event. And in rare cases, the person falls into a temporary dislocation from reality in which he or she relives the trauma in kind of a waking dream. And this can last for seconds, or it can last for days, and it can occur repeatedly, and which is why PTSD is probably the most serious and affecting of these anxiety disorders. Another one of the symptoms is a psychic numbing or emotional anesthesia. The victims of PTSD have decreased interest or involvement with people and activities they once enjoyed.
Excessive alertness, and they have a highly sharpened startle reaction, too. A car backfiring may cause people once subjected to gunfire to instinctively drop to their knees, you know, or their stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
General anxiety, depression, inability to sleep, poor memory, difficulty concentrating or completing tasks, and then there's survivor's guilt.
Right.
I knew someone who suffered from survivor's guilt. Her whole family was destroyed in a car, and she spent the rest of her life feeling like she had no right to be alive. Then there's another thing that relates to this, which has to do with paranoia. Now, we've talked about post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm going to put that aside for a moment because that's pretty easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in order to treat it, you have to go back to the event and relive it emotionally through remembering it and remembering it in a therapist's office. And you'll find that you put some association to it that made it last in there forever. Like if you've always been someone who thought that he or she should be punished because you've had some confusion about your own sexuality, you're waiting your whole life for the punishment. Then something happens that's traumatic, and it's the thing you've been waiting for. So it locks in at a much more intense level than it might normally lock in. Mm-hmm. They've often said, and one of the theories about having purses snatched is that, I think it was Freud who said that there is a purse is a symbol of a woman's vagina, and in some way it's a violation of their private parts. They've been raped when that purse was stolen, and they feel it that way, and their fear of rape and invasion gets triggered by the purse being stolen, which is what leads to the post-traumatic stress disorder. So there are associations. Some of them are to real stuff. If you've been in war, if you've been around violence as I have, and you've seen things happen that are truly horrible, and somehow you've been so far in it that it's brought you near the fear of death, it's easy to walk away with a stress disorder. If you were a child in the middle of that, mm-hmm. I could fully understand being incapacitated for life. But you have to look at the associations that also happen in the human mind. And part of the treatment that we do, I'm sure you do too, Bill. You do too, Bill? You do also, Bill. Is to try to find what was the association to this thing. And very often, it's a sense of punishment that leaves the person crippled.
Right, or guilt.
Or, well, in effect, guilt.
Right.
Because you're kind of guilty to start with, and the punishment comes in just as you've expected to be punished your whole life. The effect of having some control or finding some sense of importance. Interesting if you think about paranoia. You know, if you think about paranoia, which, first let's think about the roots of paranoia. We talked it a little earlier about this biological, inherited, genetic kind of survival mechanism, which is our autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system. We went over that a little earlier, kind of making the point that we live with our reptilian brains having kind of primitive responses that are inappropriate, and that these bring up a level of excitement and energy inside of us that sometimes from which we sometimes develop psychological symptoms. In other words, the inappropriate response of our body will create the symptoms. Once the symptoms are there and we have the associations, we can't just treat the body. You have to treat the mind because it was the mind that caused the problem.
Right.
One of the interesting things about excitement and nervousness is that it is an effect on a sympathetic nervous system, a state of vigilance. Once you get excited, your body is in a state of vigilance. The very first thing that the body does when it goes into a hyper state of vigilance is it asks, where's the danger? Where's the danger? The first thing you look for is danger. So you can see how phobias develop because you look around and you spot something that seems to be causing your anxiety, and that becomes the thing you fear. You can see how arguments develop because you could attack people and say it's their fault. But you could also see how a normal sense of survival vigilance can easily get developed into a sense of paranoia.
Right, because if you look around and there's no ostensible or reasonable cause, then rather than bear the anxiety, you invent the cause.
You invent the cause, and that becomes hypervigilance, becomes paranoia. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind with my special guest, Dr. William Astwood. If you need to reach Dr. William Astwood or me at some time other than this program, the telephone number is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. Dr. Astwood's got to leave us in a few minutes. We're continuing with our discussion about the different anxiety disorders. Specifically now we're talking about, let me just go one more minute on paranoia. The interesting thing about paranoid people is, if you take a person who in no way has any significance, has built their life as being non-significant in the world, in other words, they have no impact on the world, if they're paranoid, they make themselves important. If they are suspecting that something, the CIA or some agency, is spying on them, or if people are coming after them, or if women say, you know, all the women are jealous of me, in effect, they are saying that they are important. It's a way of dealing with a sense of insignificance to create an importance for yourself by being paranoid.
Right. To have power.
To have, well, that's a form of power, to be recognizable and important. So an average person who you would never notice may be very paranoid because in his mind he's connected to everybody intimately by their persecution of him.
Right.
There's an intimacy allowed, their persecution of him. I think it's kind of fascinating because people don't look at very often the sense of importance that seems to be so necessary among the paranoid people.
We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org or you can go to thepositivemind.com where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love. There I was, giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought occurred, teardrops made my eyes burn, 'cause I said to myself, look what you've done to her. I can feel it inside, I can't explain how it feels. All I know is that I'm never dishing of the raw deal, playing make-believe, pretending that I'm true. Holding in my laugh as I say that I love you, saying I'm more, kissing you on the ear, whispering I love you and I'll always be here. Although I often reminisce, I can't believe that I found a desire for true love floating around inside my soul, because my soul is cold. One half of me deserves to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love. Jacket so you can walk over a puddle. I give you a rose, pull out your chair before we eat. Kiss you on the cheek and say, ooh girl, you're so sweet. It's deja vu whenever I'm with you. I could go on forever telling you what I do, but where you at, you're neither here nor there. I swear I can't find you anywhere. Damn sure ain't in my closet or under my rug. This love search is really making me bug. And if you know who you are, why don't you make yourself seen? Take a chance with my love and you'll find out what I mean. Fantasies can run, but they can't hide. And when I find you, I'ma pour all my love inside. I need love. Just love you, suck on your neck, caress you and rub you, grind, moan, and never be alone. If you're not standing next to me, you're on the phone. Can't you hear it in my voice? I need love bad. I got money, but love something I never had. I need your ruby red lips, sweet face and all. I love you more than a man who's 10 feet tall. I watch the sunrise in your eyes. We're so in love when we hug, we become paralyzed. Our bodies explode in ecstasy unreal. You're as soft as a pillow and I'm as hard as steel. It's like a dreamland, I can't lie, I've never been there. Maybe this is an experience that me and you can share. Clean and unsoiled, yet sweaty and wet. I swear to you, this is something I'll never forget. I need love. See what I I mean, I've changed. I'm no longer a playboy on the run. I need something that's stronger. Friendship, trust, honor, respect, admiration. This whole experience has been such a revelation. It's taught me love and how to be a real man. To always be considerate and do all I can. Protect you, you're my lady and you mean so much. My body tingles all over from the slightest touch of your hand. And understand, I'll be frozen in time till we meet face to face and you tell me your mind. If I find you, girl, I swear I'll be a good man. I'm not gonna leave it in destiny's hands. I can't sit and wait for my princess to arrive. I gotta struggle and fight to keep my dream alive. I search the whole world for that special girl. When I finally find you, watch our love unfurl. I need love. Listen to me. When I be sitting in my room all alone, staring at the wall, fantasies, they go through my mind, and I've come to realize that I need true love. And if you want to give it to me, girl, make yourself seen. I'll be waiting. I love you.